This episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me for some X Factors. Yes, Dante Hall style. We're looking at the AFC playoff race going one by one, each team. What will swing the playoffs once we get to the dance? Jaguars O-line, Steelers pass catchers. Plus, we recap Monday Night Football, Eagles and Chargers. I think another fumble just happened. Another interception just happened. But anyways, we're going to talk about all that. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Great show for you today. We're going to get into some X Factors. Yes, Dante Hall style, the X Factors. Going to be joined today by my guy, Matt Harmon, as we look at X Factors for AFC playoff teams, because this is turning out to be a pretty insane playoff stretch. Even if we are seeing some clarification on which teams, it's crystallizing a little bit. I think each team is way imperfect, and it's pretty fun to talk about because once the dance starts, I think it's going to get wild. It's going to get, I'm thinking of a few scenes. I don't know if you've seen Heavyweights now, but Matt, might as well bring you in. I don't want to drop a movie reference without you knowing it. But Matt Harmon, great to see you as always every Tuesday. What's going on? Have you seen Heavyweights? Is that a movie reference?
I have
that you
seen Heavyweights. It is one of the movies I've seen multiple times. You know what's funny? Actually, this is going to come up in a second. But speaking of the year 2020, I believe during the pandemic, I made my wife, she was my girlfriend then, now she's my wife, watch Heavyweights with me when we moved into our house in El Segundo back in the day. So that's gonna, again, the year 2020 is gonna come up again here in just a second when we talk about a certain transaction. But I'm doing well. I have seen Heavyweights, so that is one I can get any references from.
Perfect. Because in my head, when I said it's going to be a crazy dance, I thought about the dance scene there. And I thought about the one guy just saying, just loosen it up. Just, break the groove. Just that dancing. Who it turns out to be a great director. He directed Bridesmaids and everything. But no, you referenced it. Might as well just talk about it. We're going to do X Factors, things that can sway these teams. Because I think the AFC, and I think others are realizing this, it's very muddled. There's a lot of imperfect teams. So I think there's a lot of good units, good players, but on the same teams, some stuff that can go either way. Could be very bad or very good and can lead to a charger in the playoffs or an early exit. So we're going to look at those. But like you mentioned, like the year 2020, our first AFC X Factor, I guess, is the Colts are signing 44-year-old Philip Rivers to the practice squad. And before even the show, I was like, no, they just worked him out. And you guys are like, no, they actually signed him. So this is interesting because, first off, Philip Rivers is a semifinalist for the Hall of Fame. He joins the practice squad, so his Hall of Fame eligibility does not reset, but if he gets promoted to the active roster, it would reset. This is because Daniel Jones, of course, got hurt. Anthony Richardson broke an eye socket with a stretching band, and one of the craziest injuries ever. This should have been a great timeline for him to rejoin and be a starter. Riley Leonard, who actually looked okay, especially on rewatch on Sunday against the Jags, is now week to week with an injury as well. He did take a couple hits that you can see on rewatch as well. He's tough, but NFL tough is a little different. Probably doesn't have any calluses after sitting on the bench for 6 months or so. But man, what do you think about this, Matt? Because not on my bingo card. I thought this was a joke from a bunch of accounts. I thought it was satire. I was making sure it wasn't April 1st. Philip Rivers, 44 years old, Indianapolis Colts quarterback once again.
I mean, oh my God, what an outrageous thing that's happened here. The year 2020, I'm a completely different person than I was back in 2020. We all are, except for Philip Rivers, who's apparently...
I ran a State Farm in 2020. You want to talk about differences in life?
Well... Shout out to you. Things have gotten better, I would say. The head coach of St. Michael Catholic since 2021, as Mike Garofalo says, signs a one-day contract this summer to retire as a member of the Chargers. Well, I guess not, because now he's going to be a Colts starting quarterback at some point this year. And, he's played with – it's so crazy. Like, he's obviously played for this team before, and he's played with Shane Steichen before. So, like, there is a lot of familiarity here. But, I wrote a piece about, like, the fallout from the Daniel Jones injury. And, at the end of it, because I was finishing it yesterday evening. I said, hey, like, we probably should address the fact that there are some rumors online that they might, you know, re-sign Philip Rivers. And I had, like, no analysis to add afterwards. What are you supposed to say? Who cares right. about what Philip Rivers' air yards to the stick or EPA per whatever the hell was back in 2020? That was 5 freaking years ago. I mean, so
I know.
It's just, I don't know. That's my thought. I guess I'm open to see what happens here. I was a little bit interested in the Riley Leonard experience based on what we saw on Sunday, but now that he's hurt, a team that, if we're being honest, has kind of reeked of desperation in certain yep. instances the last couple of months here, they make perhaps the most desperate move I've ever seen, which is to sign Philip Rivers off the street at 44 years old. And I mean, the best part that's going to come from this, I will say before I throw it back to you, the best part that's going to come from this is all of the Philip Rivers age-based stats, because 44-year-old Philip Rivers, according to I saw the Underdog fantasy account tweet this out, is older than 12 current NFL head coaches. One of his oldest child is older than Tyler Warren, the Colts starting tight end, and he's a grandfather at 44 years old. So I don't know how many grandpas we've had playing in the NFL before, but I guess we're gonna have one now.
I'm still trying to take it in, because it's like I kind of liked that Colts one season that he had, Philip Rivers on the Colts for that one season, where I was just like, it was fun. It was a fun offense. He got it done. There was the best corner route, I think, in history. Like, that's the Philip Rivers throw, the corner routes. And I was like, okay, that was fun. Ha ha. Okay, cool. All right, move on. It's good. You know, as I enter media, I got to see Philip Rivers for the 1 year with the Colts, get to talk about him a little bit. Philip Rivers is so respected in the NFL circles and football circles and quarterback circles, because he's just not just so competitive, but he's kind of the quarterback's quarterback, just how he plays the game. He'll be aggressive. He's so smart and just so tough as well. This is the same dude that played with an ACL tear. I mean, this guy will grit it out with anybody. But I don't know. This is a whole lifetime, it feels like, especially in the football world. Like, I've seen guys miss a year. Like, back in the day, my when my dad was an assistant with the Vikings, they signed Randall Cunningham after he missed a year, and then he had like an MVP type season, probably because of the offensive line and the receivers. but still, I've seen that. But that's Randall Cunningham, who's a freak athlete, and that was like his 30s, not 44. You know, that's just such a big difference. And who knows? Maybe it's just insurance to get through this week. Hey, I think him and Riley Leonard actually have a connection. They're both Alabama guys, or like went to high school in Alabama. And I think they worked out together this spring. So maybe there's some of that, like kind of a player coach kind of thing, where it's like, all right, we're going to help him just get along, be comfortable with here. Hey, this is how you get it done. I could see that being a live arm for practice. I could see that. But actually playing, God, I hope Riley Leonard's kind of healthy, because this is just scary to me. And the Colts O-line is fine, but you know, it's been, you can get after him a little bit too. So I'm just worried about that. Like, Rivers isn't going to run away. Even 5 years ago, he was not running away from anybody. Yeah. So
10 years ago, was he running away from anybody? No. I mean, for God's sakes.
I know. He is a great example though. Like, if you've seen him, like, the threshold of athlete in the NFL, he looks like he's slow and ancient on the NFL field. And when he was young, he's like throwing windmill dunks and stuff. Like, you know, the difference of like an NFL athlete, quarterback athlete, how they age. But they play at the Seahawks, then the 49ers, then the Jags, the Texans. So two incredibly tough defenses on either end. 49ers defense is frisky. I think they're more average-ish though. And then Jaguars defense is frisky, probably top 10-ish actually, kind of playing that way with some pass rush too. So it's not like you're playing the Raiders and a bunch of just doldrum defenses that, you know, the last couple of weeks. It's like, no, they're playing for their playoff lives and playing a tough slate. So I want to see Riley Leonard out there, because I'll say this again. I know I was high on him in the draft process. I ended up with a day two grade on him. I actually did think the film was actually pretty good. He had the pick where he should have hit the corner route. But I mean, he was handling a protections. He had some, I mean, really good stuff with just operation. He was stepping up in the pocket. He didn't have any bailouts behind the pocket, which I thought was really like encouraging for a guy just dropped in there. And he's a great athlete. That's what people don't realize. He runs like Woody from Toy Story, but Riley Leonard is like a plus athlete. Yeah, he does. And he's like he breaks 20 miles an hour as a runner. And so that's why I wanted to see him. It's like, hey, at least he can run around a little bit. And his thing is kind of deep ball. Like he kind of babies some deep balls, but he has okay arm strength, but he'll try and throw it perfectly. And that's kind of his biggest blemish. But I kind of thought that game was okay. So I'm hoping that maybe this is just like a player coach kind of situation, because why not? Let's just see Leonard out there, even if it's the Seahawks defense who decapitate any quarterback they go against.
Yeah, all good points there. God, if Philip Rivers has to start either that game in Seattle this week or in Houston in Week 18, like that seems almost mean. If I'm Philip Rivers, we're going to talk about Chargers in a second, Monday Night Football. Yeah. If I'm Philip Rivers, I'd turn that game on last night and be like, you know what? Never mind. Maybe I don't want to do this, seeing what Justin Herbert had to go through last night. But yeah,
oh my God.
I agree that Riley Leonard, my thought about him from this past week was, could have been worse. Could have been way worse for like a sixth round rookie coming in there. And I'm like, parentheses complimentary, 92 of his 145 passing yards came on throws under 10 air yards. I thought he operated quick game pretty well, which my only analysis about Rivers is that's probably what the offense is going to look like with 44-year-old Philip Rivers if he's in there. Michael Pittman had 8 catches on 10 targets. Michael Pittman actually did play with that 2020 Colts team, so at least he was like the third receiver on that team behind Zach Pascal and T.Y. Hilton. What a statement. I think that there's at least some familiarity there if Rivers has to play, but I did like the way Riley Leonard got the ball out quick, got it to Michael Pittman, and he did have the one really nice back shoulder touchdown to Michael Pittman that was called back due to the epidemic that's hitting the NFL right now and actually calling offensive pass interference. And I'm not gonna come on here. Charles would scream me off the show if he was here, because he's always kind of saying we're not fair enough on the defensive players as it is, and I do agree with him on that. But we can have let the defensive players have the OPI epidemic going on here. But yeah, I did think that was a little ticky tacky, and it was a nice ball by Riley Leonard regardless.
Yeah, that was the play he changed the protection on. I thought that was really good. Yeah, it was just a couple nice throws. He tried another one. He tried a seam. It got batted down by the linebacker, but he had some other ones where like they drew penalties or a penalty happened. Like his two best plays, a penalty happened on them. So again, I just want to see out there, especially my brain is just not clicking with a 44-year-old Philip Rivers. Wanted to see him right
how
off the
sunset.
It was nice seeing him every spring working out. Like he's been working out Drake May and Bo Nix. And I was like, yeah, that's who I would work out with. Like if I were a quarterback, like for the draft, I would work out with Philip Rivers. So that's like kind of, it's been fun to see that. So I guess he's back in our lives again, going as the Colts battle for their playoff lives. Before we get into more X factors, and kind of one of my X factors anyways, I said this in our notes, in our outline, but Monday Night Football, Chargers win this game 22-19 with just a litany of turnovers, including two by Jalen Hurts on the same play. But really, if I just want to include an X factor, because the Chargers are an AFC playoff team, one of the ones that basically are lock at this point, the Chargers offensive line is obviously an X factor and not a good way, and really can cripple their entire season. If you just watch that game, you can feel it. The Eagles pass rush is pretty good, but I wouldn't say it's overwhelmingly good. Herbert finished with the third highest pressure faced by a quarterback in a single game in the Next Gen Stats era. So that's since 2016. 68.3% pressure rate, 2 out of 3 dropbacks. He was getting pressured. And the other guys out there, it's like Sam Howell, who probably created his own pressures against the Bills. This is from NFL Researcher. Bryce Young, which was early Bryce Young going against Todd Bowles, and then Justin Herbert right there. And Herbert has had, when offensive line's been decent, low sack rates. He's actually really good about mitigating sacks. So the fact that he's getting this much pressure, this much heat, this many hits, he's getting a broken hand, he's stiff-arming guys. It's crazy what he has to go through with that Chargers team. But the Chargers defense had a great game against Jalen Hurts. They caught him a couple times, made some great plays at the end. The Jefferson interception off the tip ball, just some great stuff. But what were your thoughts on this Monday Night Football game with the Chargers winning?
Yeah, before talking about the offense, that the Eagles stink. I mean, their offense is just abhorrent. anybody who is at this point deluding themselves, if they just threw more inbreakers, if they just threw, like, come on, yo, like, it's
too many pitch routes.
Too many. Guess what's wrong? Everything's wrong. Okay, nothing is correct. Yes. Everybody wants to put the blame at one person's foot or one thing. It's everything, guys. And I don't know when it's going to get better. But that was a particularly bad matchup with what the Chargers do on defense for what the Eagles, whatever the hell they're trying to do on offense. It's not good against this style of defense like that, where they really close the windows. They play so much dime. They play so much zone coverage. That was going to be a rough matchup regardless. But you can't, you know, put out that on offense. So agree, big shout out needs to be given to the Chargers defense. But yeah, that offensive line, man, it was crazy. Herbert, career high 7 sacks in this one. I don't know that I remember, at least this season, seeing a game where the quarterback is facing so much pressure up the A gap. And I know this is, like, way oversimplistic, so please, like, forgive me for saying this. The interior is supposed to be the thing that's healthy. Like, your problem is supposed to be at the tackle position, where you once again lost another tackle in this game is Trey Pipkins, who's supposed to be the backup and, you know, all that. He goes down with an injury in this game, and Hart's got to step in for him. It's just, it's, and yet still, you're just getting blasted up the A gap, where Amarian Hampton in his first game back gets obliterated in a pass protection rep. And it's almost like, what do you want him to do in his first game back here? So I just, you're getting two more X factors for the price of what was supposed to be 8 in this show with Philip freaking Rivers and whatever the hell's going on with the Chargers offensive line. I do think it's scary going into any matchup like they got to play the Texans at some point later this year as this Chargers team. And that's going to be a tough outing.
It's just, you don't trust any of it. But that's the thing, is the Eagles team blitz, like, they're just winning with 4, or they're bringing, and this is just my frustration, I'm sure, like, anyone's heard me over the years, like, I'm very frustrated at times with Greg Roman's game planning. I don't think he adjusts very well. I think there's a lot of, like, lack of detail going against certain defenses. Like, a Fangio, the Hampton, I had the same notes on the Hampton, where it really is a forced fumble that N'Kobe Dean forced on Justin Herbert because he just ran through Hampton. That play is a creeper, and Vic Fangio loves those. Where they're only rushing 4, but they bring the inside linebacker up the A gap and they drop one of the outside linebackers to coverage. And why it's so good is that, or when it works well, and it's kind of a, I wouldn't say a bad offense indicator, but maybe an offense that can get picked on indicator. If, like, this happens, you can occupy the running back. So you rush 4, you occupy the running back. So now you have 7 in coverage against only 4 route runners. So it's just a math battle now. And what you have to do against Fangio is you have to cross protect, meaning that you slide opposite of the back, or towards the backside, I'm sorry, and the back has to cross protect if someone came from the field. And to me, Greg Roman, this is just, it was like a great little indicator about lack of detail, because it's just like, why aren't you cross protecting? Like, it's just so simple. It's such a simple thing that they can do, but they just were like, oh, whatever, we're just doing this. And it's like, but you have your starting center. Like, he should be aware to do that. Like, it's not your 4-string center. If it was 4-string center, I'd be like, I get it. Hey, you don't want to complicate things. I don't know. And there's a couple years in this system. I don't know. Why isn't there any familiarity to just do a quick little adjustment like that? Just a quick little adjustment. And they just have moments like that. And that's why it's so frustrating watching this team, is that, like, it's Herbert making hero plays and some good run plays that'll pop. But then there's just there's a lot of just blah, because I just feel like they can't adjust around their weaknesses. They have weaknesses. It's not very fair to say they're not fully formed because of the offensive line injuries. Hampton's been hurt, yada, yada, yada. But man, I just don't think they make it easier on themselves. They kind of just go, well, we can't do that now, so we just got to do this. They limit themselves. And I think on the stuff that they do, they don't kind of have the tweaks that I want to see. So that's why just pass protection, O-line. I mean, it's obvious, but the defense, the run game, their run defense isn't great. It's kind of tier tart, and hopefully he holds on and creates something. But the pass defense, I thought it was just, that was a great example. If you're not going to be an overly complicated, or if you're not a complex or a high-end passing game, which the Eagles are not. Chris Sims went on a rant last week with Kevin Clark, who's a friend, and on his pod, and just won this whole rant about Hurts in the passing game. And everything he said was 100% true. It's stuff I've just been banging the drum about for years and years and years, just about, like, hey, why they don't use motion, why they use these pass plays, because that's what Hurts comfortable with. So when you're not running a ton of pass plays and you're going against Jesse Minter and this back 7, they were just closing on everything, on top of everything. Like the final pick was an RPO that Hurts threw the high on the RPO. And you can see, well, the corner was at Hart, I believe, was just like, oh, okay, I know what you guys are doing. The flat's coming towards me. I'm just going to drop back and tip it. Like, they had another RPO earlier where Tuli Pulotu, he was dropped into coverage, and they ran an RPO, and Dallas Goedert comes in the flat. And you can see, this is an outside linebacker pass rusher. He's an edge. He's a rusher. He was like, oh, it's the RPO play. I'm going to go tackle Dallas. Like, so if you only have five staples and no offs, shoots of those, and you go against a defense like this that is just so well game planned, it's like, and the Eagles are not threatening to run the ball right now. They're a bottom 10 run game. So that was just like a perfect formula for that Chargers defense. Oh, we're not threatened. We can go dime. We're not threatened by your run game. We're not threatened by your O-line, not threatened by any new threads of your passing game. So it just felt like that whole night. That's why Turnham does so many interceptions and so many just off plays for the Eagles offense. And I thought the Chargers just, I mean, they truly had him in the crossface that entire game. Like, they really did. It was tough to watch at times.
Yeah, it was really tough to watch. For somebody who needed like just a normal game from Jalen Hurts to survive in his guillotine league in fantasy football, it was tough to watch. That's for sure. And anything but a five turnover meltdown would have done just fine. But obviously, not what we got. So yeah, I think that Chargers defense, and as we get into the X factors here, this is something I just thought about with all of them. This AFC is just so tight. It's so funky and weird looking that I can totally see even that Chargers team that is so, so deeply flawed and obviously has this one glaring red flag in its offensive line and its pass protection. And I totally agree with everything you said about Greg Roman. He's the type of offensive coordinator that when things are good and things are right, he can be totally fine. Even more than fine, can be good. But when things are going wrong, obviously that's a problem. Even with all that in mind, I think that defense is so, it's so disciplined and so good in its particular ways that they could glove up one of these other AFC teams and win a playoff game or two and, you know, go on a little run here and just kind of hope to lean into Herbert in a game like that where he is under that much duress, is still making some incredible plays, even when most of the guys don't look like they're open, at least on the broadcast angle, and he's under so much pressure it doesn't even matter. Like, their routes might not even be finished by the time he's got to already readjust. So I do think there's a chance that something like that, and that's what we're going to talk about with all these teams, if it just comes together for a two or three game sample, they could make a run here. I could see it.
We're going to talk about a few different X factors after a break, but I'll say the seven teams that are currently in the playoffs, four of them I could have just said their X factor is O-line. But that, I'm trying to paint the picture that all these teams, man, and I can't, I felt like I've been on 10 straight shows. I keep saying this. It's like, because I'm trying to figure it out and trying to rank this and analyze this. I'm like, man, it's hard to say like who's going to make the run, because I have to see what the matchups are once the playoffs start. And then I can, you know, once we get into pregame stuff, I know this is my job, but even from this point, from a month out, it's hard to see, because I'm like, I got to see who's 1-7, see what the matches are, because it's going to be so matchup dependent, as opposed to the NFC side where I'm like, oh yeah, the Rams match up well with everybody. You know, like I can truly, maybe a couple things can get them, but like on this side of the ball or this conference, it's just like, man, it's just a lot of flaws that we're going to talk about after the break. And I can't wait to talk about that. But before we get to that break, make sure you check us out on the Yahoo Sports Network, available to stream on leading fast services and on yahoosports.tv. We're going to take our first break and come back with the AFC playoff race X Factors. See you guys in a sec. We are back, and this is the X Factors for the AFC. So we looked at the AFC teams that kind of have a shot at the Super Bowl. I mean, really just looked at the seven teams that are currently in the playoffs. It's pretty locked in. Of course, seeding is going to change. But the other three teams, so I'm looking at the Patriots, the Bills, the Steelers, the Jags, the Texans, the Broncos, and the Chargers. And then the three other teams that have double-digit playoff probability, according to the New York Times Athletics model, Ravens are at 27%, Colts are at 20%, Chiefs are 12%. I did not include those three on my kind of list, but just to tell everybody kind of what the menu we're working off of here, we just kind of said, hey, go find the X factors, because there's one team that we're going to talk about both sides of the ball, but we focus on different teams. Matt, We'll start with you. What is your first X factor for the AFC playoff race?
Yeah, you said that we could do offensive line for a wide variety of these AFC teams. One of them we're going to talk about is the Jacksonville Jaguars offensive line. And look, here's just one thing I think watching that game on Sunday against the Colts, I thought that the run game looked really, really good, particularly on runs outside. You know, Travis Etienne was picking up big chunk plays as they were getting the ball to the perimeter. I thought they were doing some fun stuff with Macari, with Robert Hainsey. Like, this offensive line is never going to be great as it's currently constructed, but as long as they've got their starters out there, or at least some collection of their starters, I think that's it'll be better than what it's been at times when they've had some injuries this year, especially on the interior. But you know, Trevor Lawrence, 49% completion rate when under pressure, according to Pro Football Focus. He's under pressure on 178 dropbacks this year. That's there's only six quarterbacks that have been under pressure more. His yards per attempt is not like crazy different, 6.6 under pressure, 6.9 when clean, but completion percentage obviously jumps up really high. I thought Trevor had a great game on Sunday as well. I thought it was one of his better games this season, pushing the ball down the field, pushing the ball into tight windows as well, cleanly, confidently, like navigating and stepping up in the pocket. I think that's a big part of it as well. But really, it does come back to this run game where I think Etienne's like just not gotten credit for the season that he's had. I mean, from a statistical perspective, he's having a really nice year. People have kind of, myself included, ever since, you know, the beginning of the offseason was like, all right, well, who's taking this job? Is it going to be Tank Bigsby? Is it going to be Basil Tootin?
Here comes Tootin.
Here's come Tootin. Every week, fantasy circles are like, when's Tootin coming? Whatever. Well, he's just not. I mean, he got a little banged up at the beginning of this game as well, but Etienne has managed to hold on to the job, and I think it's because he's really good in the way that they've gotten to some of the outside zone runs. 4.7 yards per carry on zone runs this year. That's fifth most, seventh highest yards per carry on outside zone runs. So, again, this is one of those offenses that – not a perfect unit. They've obviously had their flaws, and we've talked about them on this show plenty over the course of the year. That being said, like, if they can get into a one or two game script where they can really get cooking on some of those outside perimeter runs and Travis Etienne can get rolling, I think they have a shot to maybe upset someone if they can win in their first game at home, go on the road, and then win elsewhere in their second game.
I would say the team, the AFC team, weirdly enough, I feel the best about is the Texans. Jaguars aren't, this is relative, by the way. This is not the comfort level I have with like the Rams or even the Packers or the NFC, some of these NFC teams. But the Jaguars are up there. I agree. I don't think the offensive line is it's a true strength, but it's kind of what our conversation was about them the first month of the season, where it's like they get all they can. They do the best they can at that offensive line. I do think that Trevor understands what his line is. I think what's great about it is I think everybody on that unit, I should say everybody on the unit, but they do know what their weaknesses are. I would say the coaching staff does too, with their players too. I love the zone stat that you brought up because I thought that was prevalent in the Colts game. And Etienne, I'm glad you brought up Etienne too, because I agree. I've never been the biggest Etienne guy. These types of backs are frustrating to me. Ones that aren't great in pass protection, inconsistent between the tackles, just make errors, you know, like fumbles at the wrong time, stuff like that. I think Etienne has been just so much more solid and high floor than he has been in the past. Like, I know his speed is just tremendous and his acceleration is excellent. But I've always just thought of him as a very frustrating player. And I agree. I just think that he's been more than solid this year on top of the explosive stuff. And just looking at this whole team, the Jacoby Myers thing is very real. I was even just looking at more stats with that just before I even talk about the O-line. So since week 10, Trevor Lawrence, he's first in completions of 10 or more yards. He was 14th weeks 1 through 9, third in first downs per attempt. He was 30th from weeks 1 through 9, first in throws over the middle, which I think is very interesting and also very indicative of what Myers brings to the table, and Strange really coming back as well, because now you got some size running over the middle of the field. He's fifth in dropback success rate. He was 29th over the first 9 weeks, seventh in explosive passes. And really, I was glad you brought up the under pressure stuff, because I was like, man, Trevor feels like he's actually been solid under pressure this year. And there's another part of this I want to talk about, but he's eighth in success rate when he's under pressure this year, and sixth on just throws, so not including scrambles. Not including scrambles and sacks, I should say. And 12th for EPA per dropback. And I was like, okay, that's actually a little better than I was actually even thinking. Maybe that's some of the recent weeks and what he's had to do, but that's actually good because, all right, you've shown that you can run the ball with an imperfect offensive line. Trevor can operate under pressure decently, which is he's not just totally like Jared Goffing it when he's under pressure. And so it's like, okay, so those are your weaknesses and you guys are okay at mitigating them. That makes me feel them as more, not complete, but just more alive and more just well-rounded than maybe I would even give him credit for before. The thing that was interesting to me, and this is because I was looking this up for somebody else, I was looking this up for Caleb, Trevor doesn't throw the ball away. And I didn't really realize, I kind of knew that, but I didn't really realize it until stat-wise. He has the second lowest rate in throwaways per dropback, 1.6%. The only one lower is Dak. I think he's tied with Joe Burrow. He, under pressure, he still has the second lowest throwaway rate. So his is 3.4%. Bo Nix leads all starters at 16.4%, which is the sixth highest rate since 2019, if you're curious. So under pressure, he's scrambling, he's throwing it away. But I just have looked and I'm just watching that Colts game. Even with a couple missed throws, there was a lot of good decisions. There's a lot of negative plays avoided. There's a lot of confidence that this team is playing with. You can see it kind of, they still have some penalty stuff that happens, but you can see it just like, they're breaking the huddle just a little bit earlier. You know, they're snapping the ball a little bit earlier. Guys are lining up in the right spots a little bit earlier. And you can see the confidence he's having with Myers. And I think just knowing what the offensive line is a part of that. But yeah, I'm feeling really good about this Jags offense is where it's going. It's kind of what we hoped for as we talked about at the beginning of the season. Throughout this whole season, they've had such a up and down stretch, I think, throughout this whole season. Yeah. But man, it's been some positive performances the last couple of weeks.
Now, it's a good point. Like, it feels as if we have arrived at the unit that we kind of expected, which is not a perfect unit, but it's not as hilariously just mistake ridden. I think that Cohen and Lawrence, I think the relationship, and I'm not saying like an interpersonal standpoint, I'm just talking about play caller to quarterback in a new system, has been a little bit up and down throughout the course of the year. And now it feels like they're kind of on the same page. Myers being a settling factor, as we talked about last week. And look, I said this before in the show last week, that Brian Thomas Jr. having, you know, just like limiting his route diet to the things that he does really well, as we're trying to build his confidence back up into what we can hope to be more of a full-scale breakout in 26 and 27 and beyond. Like, he made a couple of impact plays, like three big catches in this game as well. So like, that is going to help. I almost made him an X factor here, but I thought that was leaning in a little bit too much into the bit. And I think that that's we're like trickling down from the offensive line. Cause if they can protect, then they can access some of those downfield go routes to BTJ. They can push the ball over the middle. And if they can stay in positive down and distances, that's going to come from the run game as well, which obviously offensive line's got a big part of that.
Yeah. It really, it's just that even breaking down the game last week, it was like, oh wow, Trevor's actually really good against the blitz. Well, then he throws picks. And it was like, all right, he's good against man, actually, but he throws picks. So it's like, just take the picks out. And it actually looks a lot better. And I think the BTJ thing is perfect. Just think of those, what catches or what routes he caught those balls on. A go route, beautiful one-handed catch.
Slot fade,
I think, was another one where he kind of had the one towards the sideline. Out stuff, out and vertical. Let him just get rolling on those. And that's why I keep bringing up that him, Myers, and Strange have a nice synergy together. Like, their skill sets are so complementary and they work kind of perfectly together. I loved your zone stat, by the way, because zone is a high floor run. And the fact, if you don't have a dominant offensive line, but you have a running back that can kind of make it right, you can kind of get more juice out of it than you would think. So the fact that they're good at zone runs, that kind of matches what I see. So yeah, Jaguars friskiness. They're 17th. They're top 10 in overall DVOA. I was looking it up before the show. Crazy. I think they're ninth, actually. Yeah, they're ninth in overall DVOA. They're 12th last week, 17th on offense, 7th in defense, 3rd in special teams because they have Cam freaking Little who just bombs kicks. And also freaking LaQuinn Allen knocking guys out on kickoff. But anyways, all right, we'll move on to the next team, another AFC team. The Jags, we got to get our Jags quota in. Like that we just got it in. We get, you know, continue the Jags talk more than anybody. It's more relevant now than ever. All right, I'm going to move on to the Steelers. For my X factor. And really, I just put Steelers pass catchers, but I could say Steelers passing game. I could say Steelers auxiliary pass catchers. I could say Aaron Rodgers. Maybe I should just say Aaron Rodgers. That would get the clip. But this is who is catching this football. And it's something that we have talked about plenty, but now I got some great stats for it. It's been a lot of DK Metcalf, right? But it's also been a lot of Kenneth Gainwell. Kenneth Gainwell leads the Steelers in target share. 26.9% on 216 routes. Kenneth Gainwell, a running back. Yes. He leads the Steelers in target share at 27%. Jim, I got more for you. So then it's DK Metcalf at 21.9, so about 22%. Then it's Jalen Warren is number three in target share.
Sure.
So you have two running backs that are top three in target share on an NFL passing game in the year 2025. Nearly 60% of his targets go to running backs and tight ends. That's Aaron Rodgers. That's the he in this example. I looked. Only running back with a higher target share this year than Gainwell is CMC, Christian McCaffrey, which I get it. I would have a high target share for Christian McCaffrey as well. The difference in first down per route, first downs per route run while targeting the running backs, CMC is 10.4%, Gainwell's 5, so double. He has a higher target share than Jahmyr Gibbs this season. The only running back since 2019 to receive a higher target share than Gainwell this year are Alvin Kamara, Austin Eckler, Nyheim Hines, James White, Cordarrelle Patterson, CMC, and then there's freaking Kenneth Gainwell in the year 2025. Only 10 running backs this season have a target share higher of 20%. Steelers have two of them. The other eight, CMC, Gibbs, Devon Achane, RJ Harvey, Chase Brown, Bijan Robinson, Ashton Jeanty, and Josh Jacobs. So bell cows, you know, bell cow backs and RJ Harvey, who is now becoming like the main guy in the Broncos backfield. All right, we need some receivers to catch the freaking football in this offense, and we need some throws over the middle because this is not going to work. This does not work. Go balls and slants of one guy does not work for a long playoff run. I know most people are already not like high on the Steelers, but this is just outrageous. I got more. He's averaging Aaron Rodgers, 5.9 air yards per attempt, lowest in the NFL. How low is that? It's 449th out of 452 QB seasons since 2013. His average air yards to the sticks, so this is how close to the first down marker that he throws it on any down, is negative 3.2 yards. That seems low. How low is it? The second lowest for any quarterback since 2013. Only Alex Smith in 2020 has had lower at negative 3.9. So he's 451st out of 452 quarterbacks in average air yards per sticks. Wasn't always like this. In Green Bay, it was about right at the sticks, negative 0.5, negative 0.6. You know, he pushes it like what's the other one? 24.7 of his passes travel 10 or more air yards, lowest in the NFL, 10% lower than he was in 2019. That's 448th out of 452 quarterbacks. And his average time to throw is 26th because it gets the ball out just really quick, out 29 quarterbacks this season. This just is not the math for a team that wants to make a run in the playoffs. And I think we know this. I know they added Adam Thielen, but I don't think Adam Thielen's going to get dropped in and create 20 explosive plays every game. You know, Adam Thielen's a nice little chain mover type, but that's underneath throw. That's even more underneath throws. And that's even more underneath throws to the outside. So I don't know. I don't have an answer to this because this is just what Aaron Rodgers is in this day and age in 2025. This is what the Steelers pass catchers are, but this is the X factor. Until they generate explosive plays, because this math does not work. They don't get enough explosive runs, and their defense isn't dominant enough to kind of live this way. So, yeah, the Steelers passing game, auxiliary pass catchers, Aaron Rodgers checking the ball down. What do you think about that one, Matt Harmon?
Yeah, for the people who couldn't see the stat list, if you're listening to this, you're not watching it on YouTube. Not only was the Commanders Alex Smith 2020 season on the bottom, and then it went Aaron Rodgers in terms of air yards to the stick.
Yes.
The third, the player that Rodgers is sandwiched between is another Alex Smith season.
Yes.
So essentially,
yes,
just like Aaron Rodgers is playing as the most exaggerated version of Alex Smith right now.
Yeah.
And not even from an efficiency standpoint. It's just like, this is what we're doing here. And I agree with you. I don't really know what the fix is here other than to say this is insane. When you said target, you meant like targets per route, right? Like that's
yeah,
where these guys are at. Yeah, I didn't realize it, but it is insane that Kenneth Gainwell is being targeted on 27% of his routes. He's the second most targeted player on the team.
That's
in
like
week
a high
one,
end number one receiver.
Yeah. Yeah. 27 targets per route. That's I would love for any wide receiver to be close to that. And DK's not even close to that on this team.
No.
I remember seeing in week one, just one of those players, you know, for talk about every damn backfield in the offseason, never really paid much attention to the fact that, you know, Kenny Gainwell was involved in this offense because they drafted a rookie, Caleb Johnson. You guys remember him? We talked about it. It was like a perfect scheme fit for Arthur Smith. Guy's barely a rumor at this point. Just didn't focus a lot on Kenny Gainwell. And he's so involved in week one. I'm like, you know, actually, Kenneth Gainwell was kind of born to play the bigger role than you expected role in Arthur Smith's offense. And I mean, my God, the role has only expanded as the season has gone on. I don't really know what to make of this. I don't think Adam Thielen's going to make a difference. I think that Calvin Austin's good to pop up for a big play every now and again, but not a consistent player. Roman Wilson was a bad draft pick when they made it. I remember when the Steelers had the magic touch to draft wide receivers. That was a fun little narrative. The Roman Wilson pick wasn't good, and he's not caught on here. Now he's a game day healthy scratch for Adam Thielen at 35 years old or whatever after flumping out in Minnesota. So, yeah. Maybe more Pat Freiermuth. Like I do like some of the tight end stuff that they do here, but he barely plays. Yeah. He's run a route on 52% of the dropbacks this year. Again, barely a rumor in this offense. So, yeah, it's just it's a bizarre team. I swear to God, I was right about the Steelers. Like this is the year it was all going to fall apart. I swear to God, I was right. And if any of the other AFC North teams had their stuff together, the results would reflect the process.
I know. They're going to win the division. And they're like, just how this looks. I'm like, no way. And it's when I watch it, I'm like, you know, because I like Darnell Washington as kind of like a role player. But the fact like you can tell like Rodgers for a couple of weeks was trying to get him going. You know, Rodgers just has his favorites that he plays. Like last year with who's the running back? Was it? I always want to say Isaiah Adams, but that's a guard.
Oh, Isaiah Davis. Yeah.
Isaiah Davis. Yes. Isaiah Davis. All of a sudden he's playing over Braylon Allen. I'm like, what are we doing here? And I could tell after he scores his first touchdown, Rodgers is going nuts. And I'm like, oh, got it. That's your baby. Got it. And the thing is, too, like we talk about just matchups. Rodgers under pressure this year has just been bad because he can't move.
Yeah.
His arm is still alive. That's the thing. He could still chuck that thing and throws a beautiful ball. And that's what's just more frustrating. It's like, well, I just want a little more out of this. But when he's under pressure, he falls apart. So if you're talking about teams like the Broncos and the Texans, they have to go against, don't love those matchups. And on top of it, even if you can't rush with four, he's been bad against the blitz. And this has been a couple of years now because he can't move. And he hasn't changed. Multiple people say this. He's hijacked the offense a little bit to an extent that his answers to the blitz are outdated. They're archaic, but he's not going to change his ways. I thought that maybe Zach Frazier and maybe Arthur Smith would go like, hey, this is how we want to do it. But it's like, nope, still Rodgers. He's 29 quarterbacks this year. I think it was 200 or more pass attempts, but qualifying quarterbacks. He's 29th in pressure to sack rate against the blitz, 29th in air yards per attempt against the blitz, 25th in success rate against the blitz, 26th in EPA per dropback against the blitz, 26th in yards per attempt against the blitz. Only one of, he has four pass attempts against the blitz this year that have traveled 20 or more air yards. Caleb leads the NFL with 21. Caleb Williams. He has 15 pass attempts of 10 or more air yards against the blitz this year. Caleb Williams leads the NFL with 50. There's no gash or be gashed. It's be gashed and hopefully someone makes a play. And I don't know. I just watch it. The run game's fine. And I think pretty solid. And I do like the young offensive line, but this just offensive flow is just not really working for me. It's going to be interesting once they hit these playoff teams and they have to play some of these defenses, because then it could just be really, really iffy. Anything more? We want to get on to your next team X factor.
Yeah, we can get on to my next team. I will just say one last quick thing about Rodgers. It's not a fun watch. It's frustrating. When he makes a couple sick throws a game and he runs that touchdown in and does the discount double check, that does scratch like a little itch in the back of my brain from the nostalgia of, for as gross as the last few years of his career have been, from an on-field perspective, it's just, I loved Rodgers. Like peak Rodgers was so, so good and so fun to watch. And even if it is outdated and all that, it does scratch something in the back of my brain.
I've been really just, you know, because this is how my brain works, been really kind of thinking like how I stack up guys I've watched or just all time. And I think my memory is like Roger, I mean, Peyton in his prime, man, was something. But I don't think I've seen a more dominant quarterback than Rodgers, where it was just every throw was just a ripping your heart out. And it was just never made mistakes, never just creating plays, controlling stuff before the snap, pushing balls. It was just some of the, and the high velocity throws that he still can kind of get to, but just how he throws, how quick he throws. Just, I mean, there, it's just, it's up there. I've been watching a lot, if anyone's been following me online, but I've been watching a lot of old Dan Marino lately, and he's the number one quarterback of all time, by the way. It's, I know he didn't win a Super Bowl, but just like Justice Mosqueda had the best line. It's watching us. It's like if a superhero played quarterback, it's Dan Marino. Just like if Dr. Manhattan played quarterback, it's Dan Marino. It's unbelievable. Rewatching it, it looks fake. But no, Rodgers is up there for me too, because it's just, that's why talking about now, been in media, it's been on this stretch where he had the two MVPs with the Packers, which was a fun offense and skill sets and everything what he was. And watching what's happened the last couple of years, it's like, no, I remember those Packers years, especially the early 2010s, because that's one of the best things I've ever watched in any sport ever. So stop checking it down so much, please. Let me see that arm. Let me just check it off. Dust off the arm. I don't care if you throw a pick. I'm not going to make fun of you. Just chuck it up. All right, let's get on to your next X Factor, Matt. What do you got?
Yeah, I'll say Broncos rookies here for my X Factor. And like, I'm really thinking about the two players on offense, but I also just real quick about Jahdae Barron, who, you know, hasn't really been like a full-time player for this team. They are one of the more teams that, like, they're targeted a ton in the slot. They give up, I think, eighth most targets in the slot, and then I want to say fifth most air yards off the top of my head to players from the slot. So obviously that's going to happen anytime you have Pat Surtain on the outside, and we've talked about Riley Moss. Like, we swear he's good. He's a good player. He just gets one or two just atrocious plays per game, but otherwise is a good cover player. So you're going to funnel targets to the inside. So just that's something to obviously watch with this defense, which I don't have many qualms about, but something to consider there. Really, I'm thinking about the two guys on offense, of course, RJ Harvey and our guy Pat Bryant. Real quick on Pat Bryant, since they came back from their week 12 bye, he's run a route on 71% of the dropbacks, which is second on the team to Cortland Sutton. He has summarily pushed Troy Franklin to the side here, who was the other guy that was the clear number two receiver, and I think that helps the offense feel so much smoother. And I'm not saying that this offense has felt smooth the last 2 weeks, and they've played the Commanders and the Raiders, so not exactly the competition they're going to see from some of these AFC playoff teams. But Pat Bryant's caught 7 passes on 11 targets in that span. He's got 5 first downs on those 7 catches. So like, he just is that's what we were talking about when we liked Pat Bryant, is he's this intermediate, not a special superstar player or anything, but somebody that can just help move the chains, get open against zone coverage, run some of the in breakers. And Troy Franklin, I think he's a nice player, a flawed player, but he's like a role player, an auxiliary guy. And I think they needed another like true complement to Cortland Sutton in the passing game, especially because we've seen Sutton get just completely taken out of games. Yeah. Because you've got your quarterback playing erratic football, and you know, it's just easy to take away that X receiver who never moves, essentially, because he's just the only guy on the roster that can play X. And then you've got like this secondary pass catcher in Troy Franklin, who's a very, very up and down player. I think having a steady Eddie guy in Pat Bryant will really help this team in the playoffs. Like, I can see him in a game against one of these teams in the postseason just coming up with, I'm not saying a crazy stat line, but 3 big catches that just keeps a drive moving. I can see him being that type of guy. And then RJ Harvey, again, Raiders caveat included, I thought this was his best game as a pro this past week, and I think he's been very up and down over the course of the season. In his first 2 starts with J.K. Dobbins out, so the game before and then the game after the bye, he was dead last among running backs in yards, rush yards over expected per attempt, according to Next Gen Stats, which not a perfect stat, but I think kind of gets you in the ballpark of what is the running back getting on his own beyond just what's blocked. And I think that Harvey was leaving a lot of runs on the field. I don't think that was the case in this past game against the Raiders. Let's see it against a team that's not the Las Vegas Raiders, right? And we're definitely going to have some games here that'll be easier to judge, like Green Bay this week. Jacksonville has been a great run defense, Kansas City, and then the Chargers. So these next 4 games, I think, are big for RJ Harvey, proving that he can be kind of more that foundation piece of the offense and keep what I think is a pretty well-designed and solid ground game on schedule, which is what J.K. Dobbins was doing for this team.
Yeah, that's what his the thing that you need to see out of him is like staying ahead of the chains, being more high floor. I only watched that game on TV yet. I haven't watched it, rewatched it all 22. But that run chart that we just posted here on the YouTube show, that kind of shows in a good way what he needs to be more of. A lot of straight lines between the tackles. You know, that's what you want to see. That means the run game is cooking, because I really do think, like, still, Sean Payton's one of the best play designers and play sequencers. And I do think at times he's trying to figure out how the passing game works with not just Bo Nix, but just with the pass catchers as well, because it's a unique set of pass catchers. He really likes guys having certain roles. You do this real well, and we're going to have you do this real well. Like, these are things you're good at. We're just only have you do these things. You're the X, you do the X things. You're the slot, you do slot things. You're Marvin Mims, you do the gadget stuff. Like, that's just how he goes with his players. And I think running back wise, because he likes having two backs, sometimes three, is that's he's the same way in that way too. So the plan was to have J.K. Dobbins and R.J. Harvey. So when Dobbins drops out, it actually becomes a little harder on the offense, because you're losing the jab, you're losing the getting on base guy, you're losing the got runners on base, like just staying ahead of the chains, and now you're putting more on the quarterback and putting more on the passing game. That has some limitations to it. So the trickle down, you used that phrase earlier, that's like R.J. Harvey in the weirdest way is so important. Just being normal, like just being like an average runner, is huge for this offense, because then you don't get in rough second and longs where they run the same play every single time. You don't get in the third and longs where they cut the field in half. You get into more third and threes. You get into more second and fours. That's huge for this offense. The defense is so good. The offense just has to keep their heads above water. And they have been. Like, it's like an average offense, like, give or take. Do I trust them to drop back 20 plus times, like no actions or anything? No, I do not. I'll be frank with you. Like, I still don't think Bo Nix in that passing game is capable of that. But I do think if they have a neutral game script, which their defense is going to keep them in, that's why the run game just has to be normal. And then they can kind of keep in these games and have the high leverage plays, the high situation plays. I saw that you're going to have this as your X factor. So I literally have one bullet point for this. And all it was is Pat Bryant starting to get more run ? And so you started with his targets or how many snaps he's got. I'm like, yes. Cause that's what I noticed. Just again, anecdotally, I just was like, oh, there's Bryant getting a lot more run out there. There he is. And we both like him. I know you were on him a little bit more earlier than me, but I noticed this right before the bye was like, they had like several red zone plays going to him that didn't always end up going to him. And again, those are the indicators. This last week, they had a now route, which is the no step slant that Sean Payton loves. And they're running it with Pat Bryant. And I was like, oh, okay. Yep. Okay. That, hey, you earn the right to run those routes. And so the fact that Sean Payton's going, no, that's not Courtland Sutton now, that's Pat Bryant. There's some good indications here of what he's going to be. And I think just for 2025, totally. Pat Bryant, he can catches everything. He's a great blocker. And if he can just be a tough guy in short and intermediate, it helps out a lot with this passing game. I think much more in Troy Franklin. Even if I like Franklin a little bit more than you, and I think the general consensus on him, I think I know what he is. Like you said, he's a role player.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he's bad. Like I said, I mean, he's very, like, he's a mistake-prone player. I think he's a three. Yeah, that's the thing, there's... And at times he was leading this team. He has, I don't know if he still does, but coming out of the bye, he had more targets on the season than Courtland Sutton. And just like that, that cannot be. Yeah, we can't have that.
Like the Steelers offense, the math is a math thing there.
No. Yeah, the phrase targets are earned, not always, okay? Not sometimes. Always. Like with any rule in football, it's sometimes. Just real quick, just about the Broncos run game here. I had this stat coming into this past week. In the 2 weeks, again, that R.J. Harvey was the starter for this team, they were that was weeks 11 and week 13. They were 12th in yards before contact per running back rush attempt. They were 32nd in yards after contact per running back rush attempt. In weeks 1 to 10, this was obviously with J.K. Dobbins starting, they were 6th in yards before, 12th in yards after. So it was just like, okay, what's changed here in these last 2 weeks? They don't have J.K. Dobbins. Again, it was the Raiders. Do want to have that caveat, but yes, they were 5th in yards before and 14th among teams in week 14 in yards after. So a little bit more normalizing. I want to see that steady progression for Harvey, because Pat Bryant, like, that's, he's going to be a role player, I think, but like Harvey needs to be a big part of what they do and if they're going to win a couple playoff games here.
Yep. I think that's they want him to be, and they're trying to make him more. And this guy's a converted quarterback. They're trying. And it's one of those things. Sean Payton, in the run game wise, he likes what he likes because everything comes off of that. So he likes downhill runs. He doesn't like, he uses the outside runs as changeups. So it's like, that's why like Harvey's got to just adjust to that. So like when you see him, he had some moments where he was like, his vision was a little bit better and he was being more patient, but it was almost when Dobbins went down, he was like, I got to score every play. I'm the man now. Yep. And it's like, okay, just be normal. Just chill. Just
stop
run normally.
Stop taking it to that corner store, man.
Yes. No, stop bouncing it. Please stop. Because when he runs between tackles, he's pretty good. Like, it's just, I think he's just not comfortable doing it. And I'm willing to give him a little more grace than other backs because he hasn't been a running back since he was 10 years old. If it's that's why DeAndre Swift frustrates me and those other guys frustrate me, because it's like, you've been doing this since you were 9 because you're the fastest guy on the field. You got to stop. Harvey's played multiple positions. I'm like, okay, I'll give him a little bit of grace, even if I'm not super, super high on him. I'm about to say, like, man, AFC is interesting. It's like, yeah, no kidding. That's why we're talking about it right now. But we're going to take our last break and we'll come back with a few more AFC X factors. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back, and then we have a twofer on one team on both sides of the ball, and that's the Buffalo Bills. We're circling the wagons on the Buffalo Bills. I'm going to start with their defense, and I'm going to talk about their defensive spine. And that is, when I say defensive spine, I mean interior defensive tackles, I mean linebackers, and I mean safeties. And I've talked about this a few times in different ways. I think if you watch Bills games, you watch them against the Bengals, wasn't like, you know, weren't really stopping the Bengals too much until the end when Christian Benford had some really nice plays and everything. But this, they have some conundrums with their personnel. They've been playing dime a bunch now after they've been playing a bunch of base early in the season. Dime is 6 DBs. Base is 4 DBs. Nickel is 5 DBs. The only one that really makes sense with 5. But when they do that, like Shaq Thompson has been on the field and he got banged up a little bit too. But Shaq Thompson has weirdly become like an important player for this defense. But it also, Shaq Thompson's on-off splits, again, grain of salt with some of these because of all the other variables, but you kind of see this. But again, this is a conundrum that they have to figure out. When Shaq Thompson's on the field, when certain personnel's on the field, it helps them in some ways and makes them weaker against others. They're just not good at everything with their, like, wow, they're kind of like core personnel. But just as just one thing, and I'm not blaming it all on Shaq Thompson or praising him in any way, but just kind of just illustrate this. When Shaq Thompson's on the field, the Bills are 16th in rushing success rate allowed. When he's off the field, they're 30th. When he's on the field, 17th in yards per rush, 4.3. When he's off the field, they allow 5.7 yards per rush, 31st in the NFL. But the problem is, they allow more explosive passes and more explosive plays when he's on the field. When he's on the field, they allow a 17.9% explosive pass rate, which is dead last in the NFL. When he's off the field, they allow 12.1%, which is 6th in the NFL. But I'm just using Shaq Thompson to kind of just show, like, this is what they're trying to figure out on this team. Is it base that we want to base out of? Pun intended. Is it nickel? Is it dime? Is Shaq our best player to be out there? Is it Matt Milano? Is it more DBs? Like, they are throwing everything at the wall, trying to figure out the best way to help out their defense. They're kind of working in some ways since their bye week. They've gotten a little better against the run. They're 21st in success rate against the run, which is much better than dead last or 30th. Playing more dime, like I said, they just give up explosives. And I've used different stats to kind of illustrate this point. Group tackle rate, the average average depth they make their first tackle, missed tackles overall. And I think a lot of that is their safety play as well. I just mentioned Shaq Thompson, linebacker. I think some linebackers are part of this, but I think just their safeties, because they run so much zone, how they have to close up and fill the run, have to close up and make tackles when on throws underneath. So it's just I'm feeling better about the Bills than I was a couple weeks ago, but I do want to illustrate that their defensive spine is still just such an issue. And again, it's just going to make them susceptible to certain matchups, just like all these teams we're talking about. Theirs, I've just been trying to figure out because I think they are too. They're like, does this work? Does blitzing work? Okay, no, we're not going to blitz now. Okay, we're going to put 3 linebackers out there. Okay, never mind. We're not going to do that. Terrell Bernard gets hurt, so we can't do that. You know, it's just, they're just trying stuff. Coverage-wise, it's not as crazy as difference, was more personnel wise. And I think just, you know, Joey Bosa gets out or gets hurt. So also now they lose some of that pass rush juice. Deion Walker, who is this big rookie from Kentucky. Have you seen him at all? He's ginormous. Yeah. He's like 6'8", 360 pounds.
Huge. Huge.
Yeah. A little finessey, which is why he kind of dropped a little bit. But he's had some moments in a run game. But then he has moments, he's a rookie, where he's backdooring, which in run game wise can leave you too susceptible to explosive plays because no one's in the gap. So again, it's just like they can't find the so even if he has good moments, he has moments that leaves them to bad plays. And it's just like they can't get this personnel right. But in a weird way, I actually feel a little better about them, even as they're getting gashed about against the Bengals, because they're like, all right, let's just blitz Christian Benford. Let's throw some corner blitzes in there. So God, there's like sayings, I'm blanking on it right now, but just kind of like when you lack resources, you kind of come up with more creative answers. And they're kind of going through that right now, even if it's not perfect. But I don't have like a grandiose point about this. It's just that this is a weak kind of defense that's trying to find answers. Curious what they try to figure out in the last month of the season.
Yeah. My reaction, a couple reactions to hearing you say all that is, number one, like, Sean McDermott, time to earn that paycheck, buddy. Like, this needs be a little bit of a, you've got to take on a big burden here, because we're going to talk about the offense in just a second. It's one of my X factor, spoiler alert, is about the Bills offense, but the Bills offense is what it is. Like, it's not changing. Like, the flaws that they have that we've talked about on this show, like, those are not changing. So I think the defense is going to have to carry a heavy burden, because, like, man, right now, if you're Josh Allen, you can't tell me he's not sitting there thinking, looking, he's not sitting there on the New York Times Athletic playoff predictor, like, might not have Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs, might not have Lamar Jackson in the playoffs. Like, I mean, not that Lamar's been the same bugaboo that Mahomes is, strictly just like, Chiefs might not be in there. This AFC is, you know, Nate Tice, I hear about him talking about it on his podcast, that it's a very, very tight AFC race. Like, this should be my
freaking
year.
That's what he listens to every Monday morning.
Totally, absolutely. You know, I've heard that him and Haley listen to it together, and they compare notes afterwards. this should be his year to make this run. If Mahomes is not going to be here, history will not remember that. Oh well, Mahomes wasn't there. It's like, no, you got a freaking Super Bowl. We'll be talking about it forever if they win it this year. Nobody's going to care about the context of it. That's how history works. Anyways, I think the Bills defense will the Bills defense will have to take on a big burden of it. I wonder if we could see a little bit of a, hey, let's go week by week. This team doesn't do this well. We do put Shaq Thompson on the field, things like that. I will just give one caveat about the run game stats that you mentioned since they came back from the bye. Some of the run games they faced since they came back from the bye first game back, it's the Panthers with Andy Dalton. You throw that in the trash. Next week, it's the Chiefs. Their run game stinks. Then the Dolphins. Week 11, Tampa Bay Buccaneers without Bucky Irving, but Sean Tucker fried them in that game. Then it's the Texans, the Steelers, and the Bengals. And like, the Bengals' run game's better, but it's not that great. And the Steelers are pathetic, and the Texans are, you know, again, better than they've been, but still not that great. So, all together here, let's see it against some better teams going for the rest of the way. Patriots, not that great of a run game either. Browns, Eagles, Jets. So it's not as if we're going to get like a big test here.
A real answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, like, this is why I feel better about the Bills just looking at the AFC. Like, they play the Patriots, like you mentioned. Okay, not a great run game. Still have Drake May, you know. But then Steelers, like you just mentioned, kind of average-ish run game. Jaguars, I'd say average-ish, but not in a bad. I'm not saying these are bad way, just more average-ish. Texans, below average. Broncos, average-ish. And then Chargers, kind of, well, we'll see how Hampton goes. But I'm just looking at their potential matchups. There's not like where they're playing the Colts when they were cooking, or shoot, even the Ravens a little bit. You can scare you a little bit with the run game. Look at what happened in month one when they played each other. So again, it's like, okay, so yeah, they can be picked at, but can any of these teams pick at them? Like, I don't know. It's more of a question than an answer right now. But like you said, we're not going to really find more answers with the matchups that they have the last couple of weeks. Maybe that Patriots game will help out a little bit. All right, you have one on the Bills offense. What's your X factor there?
All right. So, Bills offense, I think the tight end room is an X factor. And maybe just because I'm overemphasizing what we saw in the last game, where the tight ends caught 11 passes on 13 targets for 130 plus yards.
Running wild.
Yeah, and two touchdowns. But every tight end room, it really does not matter what the quality of the players are. Every tight end room goes ballistic on the Bengals. But it did get me thinking about how important this tight end room is to this Bills team, because the wide receivers are what, again, that is what it is. It is what it is. Gabe Davis ran the most routes among the wide receivers last week.
Oh my God.
Gabe Davis in the year 2025.
Dude, like, hold, before you even go to your point, let's cut you off. They ran a play with two receivers on the field, and it's a classic play where they run mirrored routes. And it's basically like, hey, if you're in single high, we have two one-on-ones, and the quarterback just picks the guy. It was Brandon Cooks and Gabe Davis with the two receivers on the route. I almost tweeted it because I was so angry. I was like, what are you guys doing? Are you? I get it. You're trying to like, oh, we're actually running on this play. Guess what? It's Gabe Davis and Brandon Cooks. You guys are ISOing. Sorry. But that what are you guys doing?
Nothing will ever age worse than Brandon being given those the boys at WGR hell for complaining and using a different word about the wide receiver room. And in week 14 of the NFL season, you're rolling out Gabe Davis and Brandon Cooks on ISO routes. Brandon Cooks, who couldn't buy a target with the 2025 New Orleans Saints roster, and Gabe Davis, who wasn't on a roster to start this year. So it's just like, yikes. But again, that is what it is. Like, Keon Coleman's not going to suddenly become the guy. Like, that's not happening. Yep. Cam Newton let us all know about that in his like now viral rant about that particular player, which came out of nowhere, but was pretty funny. So like, that's not happening. Khalil Shakir is going to remain in his specific role. So the tight ends, I think, will have to be one of the focal points of the passing game. And, you know, Dalton Kincaid got back last week, and I think that it has kind of been a little bit of an undersold story. Number one, just him not being available for the last few weeks, and also how efficient he's been this year. He has clearly been their best downfield pass catcher. So I looked up the top 10 yards per route run for a tight end with 150 plus routes. These are all guys. This is since 2015. All these guys are the only 10 with over 2.5. This is the list. Rob Gronkowski at number one, 3.2 yards per route run. There are four George Kittle seasons in the top seven. Number three is Mark Andrews. Number four is Dalton Kincaid this year at 2.89 yards per route. He's not a full-time player. Even when he's been healthy, he's only run a route on 53% of the dropback. So he is definitely, again, he's not out there every single down. And the other players in the top 10 are Chigokonkwo, Tyler Higbee, and a Travis Kelce season in 2020. So there's a couple of random ones in there that Higbee year in 2019 where he went crazy down the stretch, and then Chigokonkwo had that magical rookie season that had us all fooled. But for the most part, like, Dalton Kincaid is up here with a bunch of great tight ends. Gronk, a bunch of Kittle seasons, Kelce, Mark Andrews. Like, this is a pretty impressive note for Dalton Kincaid in this passing game. And like I said, I think they've just kind of accepted who he is as a player. Like, he's not going to be out there as a limiting factor in the run game. They've got Jackson Hawes to do that. They've got Dawson Knox to do that. So when he's on the field, like, he's out there to be a downfield pass catcher, and he's been good and been efficient in that role. Like, this was a pick that did not look so good for the first couple years with him in Buffalo, but he is quietly, I think, very under the radar because the wide receiver position has been such a problem for this team. He's been, I think, what they kind of expected him to be, maybe a slightly poor man's version of what they expect him to be, but he's impactful as a downfield receiver. And I think, you know, the guys block it in the run game and being able to, you know, kind of marry a little bit more of the run in the pass and actually using Dalton Kincaid as this downfield weapon, it's going to have to be a big factor for this team in the postseason. Because like we were saying, This should be the year where the Bills can make a run, even if they're not number one in their division. I know Patriots fans, like, you should be rightfully annoyed that I'm saying this should be the year. I totally am. I'm validating that. But still, like, this should be a year where the Bills can make a run from that fifth or sixth seed or whatever it ends up being, get hot, make a run to the Super Bowl. And I think if they're going to do it, it's not, this wide receiver room is not going to help. The tight end room actually has to be a big deal for it. And I do think they're capable, Joe Brady being able to kind of scheme it up. I think they're capable of doing it.
I'm coming around on his usage and everything. Cause you mentioned that, I mean, how many wheel routes do they have him run? Just so many out and ups wheel routes. But also, maybe it's just the Bengals game. Like you say, sometimes the recent games live in our brains the most. Like, oh, this is what's going to happen now. The bubbles that they run to him, maybe there's some of that missing from this offense. You know, this offense can get a little dinky-dunky more than I would like.
Totally.
But
Josh Allen's averaging 3.9 air yards per attempt, I think, over the last 4 weeks.
3.9 air yards per attempt.
I can look it up here because I have it written down. I wrote it down in like a different outline.
I mean, eye test matches that completely.
It's like 3.9 air yards per attempt. I want to say since week 12, but I do have it written down here somewhere. It's obviously dead last in the NFL in that span that he's averaging. Yeah. Okay, so since week 12, 32nd, 3.9 air yards per attempt. Bo Nix is second lowest at 4.9.
Oh, my God. It feels like
that's
that.
Dink and dunk. I'm not,
that's dink and dunk as it gets. I just ranted about Aaron Rodgers for 15 minutes. It's because they run so many bubbles and swing passes and quick hitters and motion to it, orbit motion and fake orbit motion and orbit to a fake orbit motions and all these split field stuff. And I think Kincaid, it's one of those where it's like he wouldn't work for everybody, but he works for what they want to do right now. And they'll do these little bunch formations. So bunch is when it's three guys in a bunch. You have a guy at the point, two guys behind him. And traditionally, the tight end, the Y, is the left in, or the inside guy closest to the ball, off the ball. And you usually can block from that. Like in colleges, they'll pull them on counter plays, zone runs, you run away from that. Outside zone runs, you get some help from tackle. So it helps him in blocking wise. But even when they run and then they tag, technically they're called RPOs now, but really they're called packaged plays, passes and runs. But if you run a bubble with it, Kincaid's so good after the catch, and the Bills receivers are willing to scrap. You know, Khalil Shakir is willing to scrap. Gabe Davis is willing to scrap. Palmer, when he's out there, is willing to scrap. Keon Coleman is, you know, IDing and identification is not great, but he's willing to block. And then freaking Tyrell Shavers is becoming one of my like favorite role, super role player receivers because he's like a 3-and-D guy. And I wanted to bring up Shavers because actually Shavers and Kincaid work well together because they can invert roles. You use Shavers as a tight end and you use Kincaid as a basically underneath receiver. And I actually like that. They actually in the weirdest way that those two work well together. And I think they've kind of figured that out and how to tweak it. We're not going to have Kincaid block an edge. We're not going to have him lead block on anybody. He's a glorified slot guy. That's what he is. He's a big slot. I wouldn't say power slot. I would say he's a big slot. There's nothing powerful about his game, but he is good with the ball in his hands. He's good at getting upfield and getting those, what I call simple yards. He turns what should be 4 yards into 6, 5 into 7, just because he's so fluid as an athlete. It works for them. And I would say even Dawson Knox, the other tight end, Jackson Hollis is great in his role as well. Finally caught that touchdown that I predicted like a month ago on Fantasy Forecast. But Dawson Knox, the first play of the game and a couple other times in the game, they ran essentially what's pop pass, which is under center play action, tight end runs an over route or across the ball. It's really good against bad linebackers. Guess what the Bengals have? Bad linebackers. So you saw those linebackers fly into the line of scrimmage and there's Dawson Knox with nobody around him for 20 yards. But that was interesting to me because I was like, man, you guys are under center a lot. And that's something they've been getting to more. I know this on Sunday, but they were an under center on early down 71% of the time last week against the Bengals. They were 77% the week before that. They had 11 dropbacks from under center against the Bengals. They had 10 against the Steelers the week before that. And before that, the season high was 8. So I do think that the tight end stuff and maybe those tight end targets, that this is all part of it too. It ties in more to what they're doing. So that bunch formation's one, the under center run looks, getting more passes out of it becomes a little bit more valid when you have, you know, Reggie Gilliam, I like him as a role player, but you know, Dalton Kincaid's giving you a little bit more juice. And they can kind of get creative with it where you get into, say, 22 personnel, but Kincaid's a good enough athlete, and it's more like 22 like 12 personnel. It'd be kind of like, you know, how Kelsey got used in some ways for the Chiefs for years and years and years, where he's basically a slot receiver, just labeled as a tight end, but really just a receiver. So I'm glad you brought this one up because I've been liking more and more of it. And I brought up the Bills defense, of course, and it's just, they're getting more answers. The run game's awesome. And Josh Allen's great, totally. Of course. It's filling in the lines in between Josh Allen and the run game. That's what they kind of are trying to figure it out. And I think, Kincaid helps. All right, we'll get on to my last one. And this is not really anything new, anything to write home, but I feel like they're worth talking about because I feel really good about this team. Nothing about the Texans defense. Keep doing what you guys are doing. just have at it, buddy. Like, just you guys play man coverage and rush the passer, and that's all you guys do. But their offense, the pass protection, it's a huge X factor. It had to be said again. I know this is not a new talking point. It's kind of beating a dead horse. It has improved tremendously to below average level, I would say. But what was worrisome, I thought, maybe in this last game against the Chiefs, and they're going against Steve Spagnuolo with his back against the wall, was how much heat the Chiefs were bringing and how the Texans kind of looked inept against some of those kind of exotic blitzes. So it just gave me a little bit more cause for concern. CJ Stroud, when he's blitzed this year, he's 24th in average time per sack in a bad way. You know how quickly it is. He's 17th in dropback success rate, 12th in explosives, 14th in sack rate. So middling, you know, average. That's fine, though. But it just can't be what it was like against the Chiefs, where it was like, oh my God, he was against the blitz. He was pressured, or they had 14 dropbacks against the blitz. He was pressured 11 times and he went 5 of 13 for 78 yards, one touchdown. He was pressured 19 times overall. But that's got to get fixed because now it's on film. And maybe not in the next couple weeks, but maybe once we see into playoff time, like what teams throw at that, because they're going to pick at it. It's the Velociraptors with a cage. Once you get to playoffs, shoot, playing like Jesse Minter, who doesn't bring crazy blitzes, but then, or I mean, doesn't, like, isn't the most blitz happy guy, but then they just will dial up some stuff just to mess with your rules and test your rules. Like, that's why once you put it on tape, it's so scary, because everyone's going to be watching that tape and seeing what happened. So I just had to bring that up because I do think the offense has improved, and I think that they're going to end up being more average-ish, which makes them extremely live in the playoffs. But I do have to mention that it's just against the blitz, they still got some stuff to figure out with this offense and offensive line just overall. They can have some blemishes too. Also, Cade Stover coming back, tight end, helps him out, just some more looks. He's not the best player ever, but it just helps him diversify their offensive attack a little bit.
Because they've been a little.
They've used extra offensive linemen more than any other team in the NFL this year. 139 plays with 6 offensive linemen. So just getting a tight end body out there just to do some stuff.
Yeah, look, you're right. It's a dead horse talking point, but 100%. Yeah. Like, it's if they can block it up, I feel really good about this offense and where it's not perfect, but I think Nico Collins is balling. CJ Stroud has made some unbelievable, like he leaves some plays on the field, like downfield shots, stuff like that. I still think he's working through some demons from some of the pass protection issues the last few years, where he'll leave some plays on the field, but he'll also throw some freaking darts on the run. Yeah. Him and Nico, the connection is back, and like they got some role players stepping up as well, some of the younger guys. So yeah, they're a very simple one that in any game, their defense can take it over, and I have just enough faith in where the offense is if they can block it up. And like, there's a few teams on the schedule where I'd be really scared to see what that looks like. And then a few where I'm like, I could see the Texans pulling off an upset here.
Yeah, it's any team that doesn't have an overwhelming pass rush, I'll be like, okay, I think they're a live one here. All right, let's wrap it up with your last X factor here. What you got, Matt?
Yeah, Patriots secondary, specifically the cornerback room there. I mean, obviously Christian Gonzalez, Carlton Davis, Marcus Jones, like this theoretically should be a cornerback room on paper that is really good and particularly can like man up on some wide receivers. And I really love watching this secondary play against wide receivers. You know, I just love any sort of like physical man coverage. That's another thing that like scratches my itch for sure. And so far, like the results for this team in man coverage are kind of mixed. They give up a lot of explosive plays, 22 explosive plays on in man coverage pass plays, but 5.9 net yards per attempt, which is 20th in the NFL. So 20th being from like the bottom or whatever. So it's generally a pretty good defense when they're in man coverage, but they will get got by explosive plays. And just real simple on this one, I look at some of the teams that are right now, if the playoffs started today, Broncos, Jaguars, Steelers, Chargers, Bills, Texans, there's not a ton of like really scary wide receiver rooms there. I mean, there's some, in some of these past units we've talked about, we have major questions like the Bills and the Steelers, you know. I'm giving the advantage to New England 100 times out of 100, the secondary players, specifically the cornerbacks, to those wideouts. Houston, obviously, Nico, that would be a little bit of a challenge, but like Denver's up and down. We've talked about them. Yep. You know, obviously the Chargers are an electric, we got Ladd McConkey and they have some interesting role players there, but we just saw last night how you can take those wideouts out of the game if you can just disrupt Justin Herbert. So that's one where I feel like if the Patriots make this run that they absolutely can make, like they might be the scariest passing offense in the AFC right now. Statistically, they are in this playoff group, the scariest passing offense. Like, and yet they also might have the best secondary here. So I feel like going into the postseason, that's a matchup in their favor right now, where if they make a run, it's going to be because they gloved up a bunch of these offenses that maybe have some up and down wideouts on their roster.
Yeah, I like that. I did a weird, because when I watched them, I'm like, well, it's the middle of the field and the running backs that can get after them and tight ends. And they're actually decent against middle of the field throws because, you know, just who they have playing, Robert Spillane and stuff playing linebacker.
Yeah, Spillane, yeah.
But throws to the outside, though. They're 26th in success rate on throws to the outside the numbers, and they're 10th on throws in between the numbers. That would be inverse what I would think.
Right.
I know, it's funny quirk. It really is. And they like to run quarters, and maybe that's just kind of stuff where you can get peppered underneath. So technically it's on the corner, you know, like he's the closest one, but really it's just kind of like the soft area of like quarters coverage. You know, underneath the corner, corner and quarters. But no, they've just a weird defense that I haven't really been able to grasp because they're good against the run, but then Milt Williams goes down. And then they have times though. I'm like, are you guys good against the run? I think you are. I think you are. They feel like they're really good against the run. And I think the corner stuff too, because I feel like in theory, Gonzalez is all pro quality when he's on. And Carlton Davis is so frisky. And I agree with you. I like his defensive style. He'll get flags, but he's going to take it to every receiver. So I like this. Like they're matchup dependent on that defensive side. And the offensive line's got to get healthy, of course. And then the run game's been so up and down. It's just like, it's so dependent on who they play against. But man, the passing game for their offense is still good. You know, Drake May is still real good, and the receivers are really getting sorted out. So then they play the rest of the week or rest of the way. They got the Bills, Ravens, Jets, and Dolphins. So interesting matchups there. But like you said, that's not like, not really seeing a receiver, Waddle, but not really just much that I'm like, oh God there. So yeah, again, another matchup dependent unit in this AFC. Dare I even say another X factor in this AFC playoff race, the New England Patriots. They could have been offensive line too. I mean, let's be honest, they could have been offensive line.
I almost went the layup lane, but then I just thought this was something different. That again, I'm with you. I can't quite grasp, get my head around what this defense is, and I think that's to me something I'll be thinking about a lot when they make their inevitable postseason appearance.
Yeah, and they played, you know, they haven't played an exact murderer's row of quarterbacks and passing games. I understand that. So that's part of it, too. So maybe they have some good game plan stuff once it comes along, and we'll see. But I don't know. Again, I'm not counting any single one of these teams out. If you have a quarterback or a dominant unit, I'm like kind of like, yeah, sure, you got a shot here. Let's see it. And I think the Patriots definitely have a quarterback. So that's why I'm still thinking of them as very, very live. Matt, that was a lot of fun talking some X factors with you today. We're closing it out. I'll be back on Thursday with Chuck to preview week 15. God, fantasy playoffs are starting. It's going, man. We're rolling. We'll be talking a little bit about that tomorrow on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast for the Film Room. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. That's Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt_BYB on social media. Also check out the Yahoo Fantasy Film Room. What else are you working on this week?
Yeah, I just wrote that piece about the Colts. Yikes. What a depressing injury, the Daniel Jones thing all the way around. It's just like, it's sad. So you can commiserate, and unless you're a Colts fan, maybe don't read it. But otherwise, you can read that Colts piece and working on the Film Room with Nate tomorrow on the Fantasy Forecast.
That'll be fun. Remy Leonard should play. I want to see him play. Maybe not the Seahawks. You know, that might not be fun, but still, I think he's worth playing. He was not bad. You know, I swear, he was not bad on Sunday. But anyways, subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars, wherever you get your podcasts for any more Riley Leonard content that you want. Also, watch us on YouTube, on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Make sure to like and subscribe there. Some of you are watching us right now, and I appreciate that. We also do our live shows on Sunday on that same channel. And also I'm doing breakdown videos every week on that same channel. So make sure to subscribe so you check all that out on top of all the other great content we have here at Yahoo. Thanks to Stone, Austin, and Madison behind the scenes for making this look and sound good. See you guys next time.